Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast. My name is Ben Gross.
And my name is Rob McFarlane. Welcome to the show where two best friends with awful mental health analyze the best and worst of cinema as a, you know, distraction from examining themselves too hard. But hey, we'll keep that quiet. It's kind of part movie analysis, a little bit self-analysis, all fun.
Yeah.
But given that I am kind of mainly doing this as a mental health check-in for myself and you, before we get to what we're doing, how are you doing, Ben? How is this film relevant to your week?
Ooh, okay. So this film was shockingly relevant. So this has been my week off.
Right.
I've taken a week off.
Oh, you got the time off guilt.
I got the time off guilt, but I'm trying to do the whole work-life balance thing of not let one thing get too carried away and then neglect the other bits. And it's learning to sort of balance that without the guilt of everything that's come out. And this film helped a lot.
Yeah, nice.
It's a very sort of like interesting delve into that whole dynamic. It's been quite nice. How about you, buddy?
I mean, I passed my driving test first time.
Yeah, buddy! So, look at you!
Yeah. Quite a few minors in there. It was like, you know, Saturday night at Gary Glitter's house, but I got there.
To Gary Glitter's house? Did you drive there? Is this what
yes,
we're
I
saying?
Did, mate. Yeah. He wasn't in because he's still in prison, thank God, because he's a monster.
Oh, there you go.
No, I'm a driving man. I don't have a car yet. I'm saving up for just a beat up banger of a car that I can just limp to yours. And then we can finally, you know, after all this time, shake hands and go, it's been fun.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I don't like this. This is too 3D. I don't like this. Yeah.
For the benefit of those listeners out there who have clicked on our show without necessarily reading the title, All the Blind, didn't mean to leave you out, All the Blind, what are we doing this week, Ben?
This week, buddy, we're doing Modern Times
by
Charlie Chaplin. It's the second of our three-part series on Chaplin.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
it's
it is.
Also the second Charlie Chaplin film that I have ever seen.
I don't think you're the only one. I think quite a few of our listeners, This is the second Charlie Chaplin film they've ever heard of, and it's unlikely they've watched one yet, but we'll see. I'll bring them around to it. Yeah. This movie was released in 1936 and it cost $1.5 million.
Ooh, is that in today's money or?
That's in their money.
Ooh, that's a chunk.
That's 33 million.
Fucking hell, man.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. All right.
Chaplin wasn't fucking about.
Nah.
But it made 2 million.
Yeah.
In today's money. No.
Waiting for the conversion.
No. It's 44 mil. So he made a cool 33% markup.
It's fine. That's not too bad.
Do you know why it's less than perhaps the margin on his earlier films? Is this is about 11 years after Talkies.
Right, okay.
We watched Babylon earlier in the week because it's a mint film.
Incredible
and,
film.
And they talk about the jazz singer coming out in 27.
Yeah.
And this is 36. So like 9 years late to the party, he goes, oh, I'll do a talkie. And I wanted to show you this one. I wanted to include this one because of all of his films, I think this is his most overt with the politics in terms of American politics.
Yeah.
With one great exception, The Great Dictator.
Right, okay.
But I think this is the one that has the kind of largest amount of relevance to today. And it was another classic of my childhood, watched on a little fuzzy VHS copy of a copy of a copy.
I don't know, man. I still get weirded out that this was your childhood. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's an odd one, man.
I sat there with my monocle and my snuff.
I was going to say, like, it explains a lot.
Jacket.
Yeah.
This and Batman Returns. And I was just swirling my brandy as a 9-year-old going, it's very drill.
Bully. Bully.
That's capital. Capital entertainment, that.
Should we break it down?
Breakdown.
I'm done with doing spoiler warnings as well. If you're this far into the episode and you're not aware that the spoiler's in it, more fool you. You know what I mean? We're about to spoil it.
Again, 1936. If you don't know how the Second World War ended, maybe go check this film out first.
It's fuck me, man. It's well old. You know what I mean? Right. I've written the breakdown this week.
Yes.
And I need to go first.
Oh, okay. Funny that, isn't it? You know, you write the breakdown, you start, Let me guess, you've got all the best lines.
No. Oh, no, no, no. Mine are much shorter. You've got the meat of the episode.
Right, okay. Is this going to anger me?
No.
I'm not in the mood for it today, Ben. Don't anger me.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'm not in the mood, mate. It's been a rough week.
All right. Hulk, calm down. Who are you? Eric Banner.
The one everyone forgot about. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
The tramp is back!
Overworked into a manic mental breakdown by a boss that cares more about profit than people, the tramp snaps and runs around sexually harassing various women, spraying dangerous chemicals in the faces of anyone in his vicinity, and ends up being taken to a mental hospital to be treated.
I mean, okay, anyway, upon leaving the hospital, now fully cured of his mental breakdown, the tramp heads out to find work. As he walks through the streets, he sees a truck drop a flag on the ground. Trying to get the truck's attention, the tramp marches down the road, waving the flag and yelling. Completely oblivious to anything other than what's going on in front of him, the tramp unknowingly becomes the leader in a union march. The police storm in on horses to break up the march and immediately send the tramp to jail for being a communist.
For being a communist. We now meet the gamin. A poor, almost homeless teenager stealing bananas from boats on the dock to feed her two younger motherless sisters and her unemployed father. And back in jail, we see the tramp accidentally inhale a fuck ton of cocaine and foil a jailbreak, saving the lives of six cops.
We've all been there.
Yeah, it happens.
Back outside near the banana-ridden docks, the gamin's father is shot and killed for some reason. Fucking poor people can't afford bread, but bullets, loads of them. Makes me sick just thinking about it. Thankfully, I, Rob McFarlane, am too posh to ever be gunned down like a piece of human shit in the streets. Now orphaned, the gamin and her two sisters are to be taken away, but after her sisters are disposed of to the system, the gamin makes a run for it and escapes. Ben?
Oh, Rob, that's quite personal, man. Good for you for opening up, though.
Do you remember we started this? We started this where one of us would write a breakdown and fuck the other one over. Remember how it ended?
Yeah, you wrote one where I didn't understand because it was way too wordy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wrote this and then, you know...
Okay.
You've just gone off on one and opened
Have
up
I?
About this.
Yeah. Please that's continue. Crazy. Please continue.
After trying and failing to steal a loaf of bread, the gamin gets caught by cops for bakery theft, which the tramp takes the blame for. After a posh lady grasses on the tramp for lying, he heads immediately into a cafe to steal all of the food and make sure he gets arrested again, as jail is easier than life outside for a poor person. The gamin is also picked up in the same cop wagon. Oh my God.
The cop wabbin.
I was thinking...
I'm hunting wabbins.
I was about to say bread.
No, you got this, babe.
The gamin is also picked up in the same cop wagon for bread theft.
Nice. The tramp and the gamin cause the cop wagon to crash and escape to start planning a life together, where the child who should literally be in a foster home is a stay-at-home wife, while the tramp is a middle-aged working man. The tramp lands a job at a department store as a night watchman, only to sneak the gamin in to steal all the food, play on roller skates, get shit-faced with some burglars, and immediately get arrested again the following morning. This guy fucking loves jail.
He loves jail.
He does.
So the tramp's out of jail, the gamin has found a shed in a pond that they can call a home.
It's a shed in a pond.
And the factories are back open for business! The tramp rushes down to get a job and is assigned to be the mechanic's assistant, fixing the machinery. But oh no, the workers immediately go on strike and the tramp is out of a job again. He ends up going to jail again for some slapstick hilarity of hitting a policeman in the back of the head by stepping on a 2x4. I don't know, this one's a little bit flimsy, man. But jail.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then out of jail again, the gamin has landed a job performing at a cafe and gets the tramp a job as a singing waiter. He's a shocking waiter, I challenge that.
Okay.
But a mint performer.
Yeah, yeah.
Meanwhile, the cops are tracking down the missing orphan child and catch her at the cafe. The tramp and the gamin make their escape and flee the city with smiles on their faces.
So in summation, this film is fucking insane and has about 35 storylines going off all at once.
Yeah.
But they all last about 2.5 minutes.
Yeah. It's also the first one he ever scripted. It's the first Charlie Chaplin film to ever have a script.
How is this scripted? It's literally like a... And then, and then, and mm-hmm. then, And then?
It was earlier time in cinema. I mean,
it's fun. Don't get me wrong.
It was the 1930s. And look, the 1930s in America was a... So not everybody knows, but the 30s was the Great Depression.
Okay.
Had no job. So one in four people who could have a job had no job. So like 25% of the workforce over and above the normal unemployment. So like normal unemployment is like, what, 10%? And then they're like, slap another 30% on that.
Jesus.
2,294 banks had failed in 1931.
Fucking hell, man.
Yeah, because it's like A Wonderful Life. So if you've seen It's a Wonderful Life, it's on every Christmas.
Yeah.
American banking system at the time was not big conglomerate banks. It was the bank at the end of the street. Street bank. And all of them went bust.
Fuck.
There was a huge, huge thing about, you know, staying out of the conflict in Europe because America had its own problems where everyone was incredibly poor. Chaplin wasn't. He was richer than the US president. He was at one point one of the richest people on the planet.
I read this. I read that he was the highest paid performer on planet Earth.
Yeah, he was.
That's fucking nutty. This middle-aged man who is casting children to be his private chefs is the highest paid person on planet Earth. And all he's doing is going, yeah, but don't you feel bad for the poor? Bitch, pay for him. you could afford it.
Well, if you think Hollywood was a brand new invention, right?
Yeah.
Like there hadn't been an international export of culture from America on this scale. Suddenly it was being bought by the fucking truckful, and there was one performer who you could understand regardless of what language you spoke.
Yeah. Mr. Bean.
Fuck off. What did you think of it? What did you think of the movie?
Okay, this is a complex one for me, man. I've got a love-hate relationship with it.
Oh, okay. 5 out of 10.
Solid 3.
Oh. We're not talking about your dick. Come on.
A love-hate relationship with this thing. There's lots to love in it. Like, I love the camera work. There is some genius cinematography in this. Like, incredible cinematography.
Right.
The set design is fucking mesmerizing.
Mint.
The first Coke joke that I know of.
Yeah, I think it might be the first in cinema.
The first Coke joke in cinema.
Yeah. It was a huge issue at the time. It was like the...
I can imagine.
A morality code in Hollywood at the time. I believe it's called the Mays Law. And yeah, they were up in arms about it.
Okay. Well, it was fucking incredible. The subtext of the film is great. The representation of the working class and how he humanizes the poor is fucking phenomenal.
Boop, boop, boop.
Phenomenal. But hear me out. Boop, boop, boop. I hate this. I hate everything about it. The bits in the movie that I really didn't get on with, there are two literal pie in the face jokes where I was like, this is the slapstick that I'm not here for.
Yeah, they're brief, but they're in there.
Yeah. And I'm like, come on, man. The odd sort of like child grooming to be personal chef thing that I've seen two of his movies now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in 100% of those two movies, he has groomed a child to be a chef for him. And it's weirding me out, man. Like, it's mainly the child grooming thing.
Oh, okay. I would have thought it was the pies.
Yeah.
Offended you more.
No. Yeah, you are exactly right. It was, that's more offensive to me.
Right. Pie in the face trumps.
Yeah.
Trumps child grooming in your. Yeah. Okay.
Not
okay.
Child grooming as a whole. Private chef child grooming.
No, that's on record now. That's forever. Child grooming as a whole, not as offensive to Benjamin Groves of the Every Movie Ever podcast as custard being applied to a man's face percussively.
It's the build-up for it. You know what I mean? No one needs that much build-up for a pie face.
I thought you were just talking about no one needs that much build-up for child grooming. And I hear it takes a while, so.
I don't know. All these kids just seem like super willing to cook for him. It's odd.
Right.
It's really odd.
There's a couple things that I think, though they're right things to be offended by. Child grooming. Mm-hmm. You know, controversially, I think I'm with you. I think that that's a bad thing.
Okay.
You know, we should have less of it.
Wow, I didn't expect us to meet at this point. Yeah.
Right? Wow. I don't want to rock the boat, but I'm with you there. Pie in the face. Look, it's fine. It's a style of comedy that either gets you viscerally on a physical level where you're like, and you know it's stupid. You know you don't want to laugh at it, but like, it's just funny. Like we discussed last episode, we did Chaplin. where I'm like,
yeah,
toddlers falling over whilst carrying ice cream.
Hilarious.
I can't tell you why I find it hilarious. Yeah. It just does. And there's a lot of comedy in this that just gets me on that level.
It's because of the helplessness. Do you know what I mean? Like, there was nothing that could have prevented that.
Yeah, yeah.
Pie in the face, it's like, oh, come on. There's too much effort in that. It's not natural.
Right, but the first pie in the face is when there's an inventor who's trying to sell his new invention to Charlie Chaplin's boss.
Yes.
And the whole invention is a thing that's physically strapped to the worker.
Yes.
And will force feed them whilst they work.
Yeah.
So you don't have to pay your employees lunchtime and have your production line stop.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a man physically strapped into a force feeding machine. You've got helplessness there. You know, he's surrounded by his, not his boss, his boss's boss's boss, the owner of the company.
Yeah.
He is, you know, a minnow to this man. He's being used as a human guinea pig. Meanwhile, he's getting twatted in the face with sweet corn. I personally, there's helplessness there.
Mate, that sweet corn bit is too much. That was the bit where I was like, I can't even watch this. Do you remember those fucking TikTok videos when people were putting...
Yeah,
a corn on the cob on a drill and then so spinning good. It and trying to eat it, and their fucking teeth were flying out of their mouth. That's all that was going through my brain. Like, anything with teeth, mate, I can't do. Anything to do with teeth, I'm out. Can't do it. And fucking out. When it was happening, I was like, are those bits of corn, or are those his teeth? Are those his teeth, or are those corn? I can't do this.
So there's a couple things you picked up on there that I just sorely love about this film.
Okay.
That I think make it so ahead of its time and so insanely relevant early, right? So Henry Ford invented the production line at the start of the century, right? That was Henry Ford's great innovation. The idea that you had a complicated task and you'd break it down into smaller tasks and have one person just doing a repetitive action, and it would be orders of magnitude quicker than getting one person to know the whole process.
Yeah.
So revolutionary, in fact, that you can just take that same method and apply it to any industry and suddenly have an industry-topping business. A good example being McDonald's, who just went, we took what Henry Ford was doing and did it with burgers, and now you can have a burger in minutes and it's better than our competitors, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So imagine, like, a few years after that, Chaplin comes along with a film that is inspired by him chatting with Mahatma Gandhi, of all people. He sits down, has a chat with Gandhi.
What the fuck?
And they talk about the effects of mechanization and the effects of machines on people. And Chaplin was kind of defending it. He was going, you know, there's utility and it's going to drive us forward. And Gandhi's like, yeah, but it's going to make people more miserable.
Did Gandhi ever work on a production line in a factory? Did he ever have any first-hand experience with this?
I mean, a peace factory, mate. An independence factory, maybe. A child sex abuse factory. Apparently so.
Oh, God. Now I see where
Chaplin
there might be
did
friends.
Is he took this chat. He took this chat with Gandhi.
Yeah.
And he turned it into a sort of Fritz Lang's Metropolis with touches of George Orwell's 1984. Bearing in mind, George Orwell's 1984 wouldn't be written for about another 20 years. Like, 1984 was published in 1949.
That's insane.
But Chaplin's got a movie where it's just a throwaway bit where the boss can see you through a camera at any point and go, "Oi, you, get back to work."
In the bathroom, no
less.
In
the bathroom as well.
Yeah,
right.
That's kind of fucky. You know what I mean? That's kind of fucky.
And in 1936, to go, there's going to be mass surveillance that's going to be pushing you on productivity. And your individual happiness is going to be completely irrelevant.
Just null and void.
Null and void. And to do it with, like, some pretty obvious subtext of there's a man being dragged into the cogs of a machine, being like, he's literally getting shit mixed by industrialization.
Yeah.
It's pretty foresighted, right?
I mean,
bearing in mind the production lines had been going for about 4 years, and he's like, oh, I know where this is going.
Yeah, okay, I've got a bit on this. Just bear with me. Bear me 20 minutes.
Yeah. And I'll write something that's still relevant 100 years later.
Honestly, right, mate. Fucker. That whole fucking scene is magical. Absolutely. It's full of whimsy and horror.
Yeah.
All at the same time. Because you watch it and you're like, oh, well, isn't this quite playful? And you look at the subtext and you're like, oh, that's my life. that's my life in 2024. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And it only ever seems to get worse, right?
Yeah.
that obsession, because at least in Chaplin's time,
yeah,
the obsession with how productive are you was whilst you were at work.
Fuck me, man.
So when he clocks off in this movie,
yeah,
he can just do what he wants. Whereas now, when do we clock off?
Yeah, it's a good shout, man.
We've got Big Brother in our pocket going, what have you done today?
Yeah, there is a fucking magic rectangle being sort of like, here is access to a million people showing you how much more productive they are than you today. And
really?
So sitting in my pants and playing Monster Hunter for 12 hours straight isn't being productive? Beg to differ.
Yeah, and so what I'll do is, when I have my depressive episode, I'll just wrap myself up in the bed burrito and just watch other people be better than me and go, I'm not feeling any better.
Yeah. It's kind of fucked, man. It's really fucked. I've been trying to take a step away from it this week, but it ain't happening. It's like an addiction at this point. It's not like an addiction. It is an addiction at this point. It's like an impulse. The magic rectangle, fucking smackhead race that we all are. Do you know what I mean? Every human is addicted to fucking Instagram. It's insane. So you've just mentioned like Henry Ford, Mahatma Gandhi, fucking George Orwell, all these like very rich, very wealthy people. How did the wealthy of the time take to having Chaplin shit on them? Because that's essentially all he does in his films.
Again. After the kid. Like.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he was hanging out with the wealthiest of the wealthy. So he was sleeping with the lover of Randolph Hearst.
What the fuck?
Who Citizen Kane is based on, right?
What the
huge
fuck,
industrialist.
Man.
They were mates. He was going around his house. They were having dinner.
And then he was just fucking his wife.
Yeah, no, well, not wife. They weren't married. They were, you know, seeing each other.
Oh, that makes it better.
And then he took Einstein round for dinner and the woman embarrassed him in front of Einstein. So like he never saw her again. It was like the guy was a mess. But
what the fuck, man?
At the time, it was like, oh, how isn't this funny? And isn't this prescient? And isn't all this sort of stuff?
Wait, how does Chaplin get embarrassed? Like he does the stupidest shit on camera.
Mm-hmm.
Hundreds of times to get the take perfect.
Yeah.
That's it. I can't even think of what would embarrass that man.
No, she the lady in question made a bad reference to Einstein's haircut and how messy it was.
Wow.
And, like, if you've managed to convince Albert Einstein to dinner with you, and then the woman you're having sex with is like, you've got weird hair. You're like, oh.
Oh my God. Buddy, I'm so sorry about this. I know you're working on quantum theory right now.
Right, right.
And you don't need to be sitting here eating your prawns, being told you've got a shit haircut.
Yeah, exactly.
What the fuck, man?
So at the time, I've read a lot of the contemporary reviews of this movie. And they're talking about how on point it is and how socially aware it is and how funny it is. And mainly about the use of sound, because the sort of public had been expecting Chaplin to do a sound movie for years at this point, and he hadn't, and he hadn't. And this one was marketed as The Tramp Speaks and all this sort of stuff.
Ugh.
However, a couple of years later down the road, a couple of decades down the road, Chaplin gets exiled from America for anti-American tendencies. And this was one of the big bits of evidence that they pointed to towards him being a communist.
What, this film?
This film.
What the fuck?
Because if you think about communist slogans like own the means of production, what do we have in this? We've got a production line. We've got it sending somebody mad because the boss is a bastard.
Hold on.
And then what happens after that? He ends up at a rally waving a red flag.
But if...
being arrested as a leader of the people.
If we're using this as evidence in court, how is every rapper not in prison for murder? Because all they sing about is killing people. Like, what the fuck?
Well, I mean, rap wasn't as popular a genre in the 1950s.
Oh, really? I thought...
No.
Didn't Wu-Tang drop their first EP in 1927? Or am I correctly mistaken?
So one of the big things about the civil rights movement and a whole bunch of that is it was wrapped up in McCarthyism, which is a particular kind of American politics based on a senator called Robert McCarthy, who was terrified of this sort of communist influence.
Pussy.
We covered Oppenheimer, and I was talking about the two sort of competing ideas. You had capitalism and communism.
Yeah.
And America went with capitalism, and it really committed hard to it in a way because it wanted to differentiate itself from communism, which was the big... happy idea at the time that every government was trying.
Right.
And it was kind of threatening US institutions and US democracy and all this kind of stuff.
Okay.
And this guy McCarthy ended up keeping files on people. Oppenheimer had one where the FBI would just tap your phone.
Oh,
and they would write
shit.
Big old fucking lists of all the shit you did.
Yeah.
Chaplin's was 2,000 pages long.
Of course it was.
They fucking hated this guy. And the differentiation between socialist of like, I think everybody should have equity and equal rights and we should all help each other to get along.
Yeah.
Was too close to communist
right.
for them to have any fucking time for it. When he was like, oh, I'm just a fan of the people. They're like, get out, agitator. We fucking hate you.
You're not a fan of our people, cunt. Right. Off you fuck.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So this did really, really come to sort of stab him in the face as a piece of media.
This is kind of fucky. But I think after hearing everything that you've just said, it's brought me on to my next point.
Right.
In that I don't think that the tramp in modern times would have minded. I don't think he would have judged anyone any differently.
No.
He would have treated everyone exactly the same. Because this is what I love about this character. He never holds any judgment towards anyone.
No.
Like, every single person is an equal. It doesn't matter whether you're rich, poor, a minister's wife, or a jailer, whether you're a cop or a cokehead, we're all the same, like rich or poor, young or old.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he treats the young a little differently because he's just grooming them all to be like fucking right. chefs. You know what I mean?
I'm going to need to just put my hand up here.
Okay.
You need to stop bringing that up, right? For reasons that are relevant to the podcast.
Okay.
Because I said at the outset, I'm gonna make you fall in love with Chaplin, or at least, you know, understand who he is, and then we're going to see if you can forgive him. Now, you're skipping ahead,
right? Oh, no. Don't do this.
Right.
My thing was playful. It was like, he wants a child chef because child labor's free. That was supposed to be a little jab in the ribs. If this turns paedophilic, I'm not going to be happy.
Turn paedophilic.
Why did you say it like that? Why did you have that look on your face?
I have a question for you, Ben.
Right.
How relevant did you find the subtext of this film from 1936 on the way that we live today?
Yeah, that's a good save. I hate you, but that's a good save. Thank you. Terrifying, to be honest. This is so unbelievably relevant to everything that's happening today. Like, I mean, fuck. Whenever I'm out of a job, I'll pick up factory work sort of between jobs. You know what I mean? Just to sort of like keep the bills going and stuff. It is that factory. It is literally that factory. And it is literally everything super fast. The hours are super long. No one gives a fuck about you or you as a person. It's just, can you do this menial task that we will pay you very little money to do? And then that's it. That is it.
Yeah.
I hated every second of it, but I loved every second of it. I hate that it's still relevant today because it's almost 100 years later and everyone's like, yeah, but, you know, Dior's a thing now and Converse are a thing now. So, you know, we could just stay on the production lines but have nicer things outside.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, but look, I mean, no, you're right. I can't. I was going to be like, yeah, but no. No, look. There's a remnant.
No, it's a never-ending cycle, man.
It is.
Literally just a perpetual fucking machine. We are all on the production line as we speak. It doesn't matter whether we're at work, whether we're at home, whether this or the other. We're all fucking just cogs in a big machine to make other people richer. And it is weird that guys in 1936 were going, look how fucking mental this is, and in 2024 we're still going, I'm just trying to get my work-life balance together. Do you know what I mean? That was literally my thing at the top of the fucking episode, man. Like,
okay, but look, I think he offers a cure. Well, not a cure, but an antidote.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the reasons I love this film, as I think.
Okay.
We'll get to it. What were your standouts? What were your standouts for this movie?
Oh, dude, there was three standout moments in this movie for me.
Right.
The set design was otherworldly.
Right.
This is the reason that I love all the 1950s goofy sci-fi movies and shit. The set designs them are always incredible. They're always magical. They're big, imaginative. Obviously, it's black and white, but in your mind's eye, you see them all as like bright colored, almost Alice in Wonderland-y. Do you know what I mean?
Right, right. So he built those. So the factory's built.
That's fucking insane.
The department store is also a set that's just been built.
That's incredible.
And also the streets at the waterfront. He built three sets.
That's amazing. Holy shit, man. But this is what I mean. Like that stuff, the bit where he goes into the machine in the factory and it's all these giant cogs and it's like a weird little snaking thing and he's adjusting all the screws on the way. Dude, Alice in Wonderland, but mechanical.
Right. It's right. Incredible. And so painful that... there's a scene where he comes out backwards and they just reverse the film. He's like, I am never getting back in that again. It absolutely kills.
Yeah, I can imagine.
This is from a man who will do next to anything for physical comedy. And he's like, yeah, but not that. That thing scares me.
Oh, pie in the face is okay, but yeah. Yeah, sound okay.
Yeah,
I see.
Yeah.
Pussy.
Okay, other standouts?
He has no right being that good at roller skating.
It's infuriating.
He has no right.
It's infuriating.
Being that good at roller skating.
He's an absolute angel on roller skates, and you just go, he'll have learnt that for this film.
Did it as a joke. He did. He got that good for a joke. Can you imagine being that good at anything for a joke? The amount of time I dedicate to doing the dumbest shit, and I'm terrible at it, right? And I'm genuinely trying. And this cunt picks up a pair of skates and he's like fucking, I don't know, just like a figure skater earning nothing right. But nines at the Olympics. Fuck you.
It's also the fact that in the scene in the department store, he and the young girl, they've snuck into the department store because he's got a job as the night watchman. And he gets a pair of roller skates on and he's going to do his shift on skates. And she's like, wow, you're really good at that. He's like, I'm so fucking good at it. I can do it blindfolded. And then starts skating around a bit where they're on a mezzanine level and there's no rail, right? And he's got the blindfold.
Yeah, the railing's missing.
So he's doing loop-de-loops and every single time he comes around, he's getting millimeters away from the edge. Graceful, swan-like, beautiful. The thing that made me really impressed with Chaplin's ability to roller skate is when the female character shouts and goes, oh, you're in danger. And he takes his blindfold off and sees that he's in danger. Yep. Instantaneously loses all skating ability.
Yeah.
And it's Chaplin's ability to be shit on roller skates.
For a joke. He got so good that he's able to be shit on command. For a joke. This guy has done how many films at this point? Like 350?
He's done over 80. Most of them are shorts, but yeah.
Right. So he's done fucking 80 films. He's the highest paid person on planet Earth. And he gets so good on roller skates that he can be shit on command. Who has the time for this? Where's his work-life balance? Because I need to fucking, I need some weighing in on that, man.
He didn't have one, so he would regularly get obsessed with films. One of the big issues he had maintaining relationships in his life is that he was completely and utterly obsessive. This scene that we're talking about, the roller skating scene, took him 8 days. He was on camera for 8 days.
Jesus
and
Christ.
And the scene is what, like 90 seconds?
Yeah, minute and a half, 2 minutes maybe.
He would get obsessed. He wouldn't have relationships because he wouldn't go home. I mean, bearing in mind, again, he wrote, edited, starred in, wrote the soundtrack. You know, he did everything.
Yeah, but
I'm sure if he was probably in craft services designing the menu, being like,
<It's> like did you like the macaroni cheese? Yeah, I made that. The fuck are you talking about? I needed practice on my skates. You know what I mean? Whilst I was writing my next three movies. So I thought, fuck it, I'll do it whilst making mac and cheese for everyone. Fuck you.
100%.
Fuck you. Jesus Christ. Unreal, man. And the third thing is when the department store gets broken into, the burglars are literally shooting guns at him and he has the warmest reaction to these guys. He like gets them food, gets them drink, obviously recognizes one from the factory, but when they worked together at the factory, they weren't friends. Like he was a dick to the tramp. And even with all of that, he was just sort of like, well, you boys are just hungry. Let's just get you some food. It's like, bitch, what the fuck is, this has to be a defect, right? Because at some point when someone is shooting a gun at you, you have to go, maybe I don't like these guys. The tramp, he's like, nah, they're just hungry. What? I mean, it's inspirational, but infuriating at the same time.
Well, I mean, he is shit-faced at the time.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
There's so much warmth I have for this film because of how well directed it is, because of the relevance of the subtext and the relevance of the plot. I also really like the romance in there because it's never a physically realized romance. They like each other.
Wait, the romance between the tramp?
Him and the gamin.
Right, so the tramp who is a middle-aged man.
Well, the tramp is ageless in this. He's meant to be like mid-30s. She's mid-20s.
Okay. No, she's not. She's an orphan that should be in a foster home. There is a literal... the way that she escapes from the authorities that are trying to put her into the care system because she's a child.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah.
That's the whole thing of the film.
It's maybe because the actress Paulette Goddard is the most stunningly attractive woman. I just see her smile and I'm like, oh my God, this is the best romance I've ever seen.
Okay, seriously though, take a look at it. The tramp is a middle-aged man. She is literally, she should be in a
foster... Episode 3, Ben, shush.
Oh, I hate where this is going. I hate it.
Okay.
I'm too invested in Chaplin right now.
Where are you with Chaplin then, Ben?
I'm too invested. I'm genuinely enjoying his films, right? I think the way that he writes movies is perfect.
Right.
He makes goofy, stupid movies that say the most critical, fucking close to the bone social commentaries of today, let alone back in the fucking 20s and 30s. Like, it's mind-boggling that this guy can have so much foresight that he's able to write this material that is literally timeless. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. I think it's a comment on how fucked we are as a society more than anything else, you know what I mean?
If you're saying he's writing material that's timeless, the soundtrack to this has the song Smile, which
Chapman
does.
He wrote that.
Though your heart is aching.
Dude,
even though it's breaking.
Me and Laura watched this, and the first few chords where it was like, da, 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 I was like, that's the fucking first few chords for Smile. And I felt dead proud of myself. Didn't realize the cunt wrote Smile.
Now I feel like
a fucking idiot.
Yeah. So the melody and the harmony, all that is him. The lyrics were written in a later decade and not by him.
All right, well, that.
They were based on the title cards of this film, which is also not only the last appearance of the tramp, but it's the last, besides novelty movies or movies that were doing it for stylistic reasons, it's the last big scale silent movie. So this is the literal end of the silent movie era.
Is it the same tramp as the kid? Is it like chronological?
No, because the tramp, we're before franchises, we're before... continuity really existed as a thing, right? The tramp's more of like a kind of archetype.
Oh, right, okay.
He is more like a kind of concept or an idea that you pop into a situation.
Right.
And the tramp never changes. The circumstances around him do.
Oh, okay.
And I think that's the way that Chaplin comments on stuff.
Right.
That Chaplin takes a thing that's the same anywhere it goes, right?
Right.
And no matter what happens, and this is where I think Chaplin offers the antidote to that never-ending cycle that we mentioned earlier, is that the tramp at the end of this movie decides that no matter how bad his life is, he can still be happy because he has people around him,
children
that love him and he loves. Fuck off. And that smile, what's the use of crying? You'll find that life is worthwhile if you just smile. Uh-huh. Like the last title card, which is the last title card of the silent movie era, which is like, buck up, we'll get along.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yes, it's always going to be awful, but yes, there will always be people next to you who agree that it's awful too. And you can look at each other and smile. And I love the fact that for the last ever appearance of the tramp, he walks off into the sunset with company.
A child. I'm struggling to get past it now. You've dropped too many fucking little bits and I'm like, I'm dreading next week. Not next week, the week after. I'm dreading the next fucking Chaplin film, man. Fuck.
Right. Well, okay, let me ameliorate that slightly, okay? Let me give you a little bit of help.
Okay.
So Chaplin's last wife.
Okay.
He was 55 when he met her.
Right.
And she was 18.
Awful. Awful. Awful.
And you've already seen Chaplin's first wife.
Where? In The Kid.
In The Kid, yeah. Do you remember the angel he chases around?
The one who's with the boxer?
Yeah.
No, she's a child. That's not his wife. Like later on, though, right?
Yeah, so she was 16 when they married.
Stop it, man. Oh, that's the face when I was like, yeah. Okay, so a child. And you were like, no, not technically a child. 16?
Yeah.
All right, technically. Hold on a sec. Isn't America 18?
It wasn't at the time.
Oh, that's rank. I mean, I say that. Yeah. It's still 16 in the UK, but yeah. It's still
rank. What are you talking about? Oh, yeah. Disgusting. That's, I mean, I agree with you, I'm but let's so not claim offended. Any moral high ground here. Yeah.
I'm so offended that it was 16 years old in 1920 in America. Also, in 2024 in the UK.
Yeah.
What the
yeah,
fuck?
Yeah.
Dude, how old was he and the kid?
Mid-30s.
Stop, man! That's, no! No! Yeah. That's yeah. fucked. All right.
He, all of his wives were teenagers. And
fuck's sake, man.
He was always on the right side of the law, just about.
Awful.
Just about.
Awful sentence to say about someone.
Incredibly, incredibly tasteless. Bearing in mind, this is a man who has slept with over 2,000 women in his lifetime.
Who was keeping track?
Right. So
who was counting for? Did he have a tally system?
No, so he figured out how many different people he was sleeping with monthly and then worked backwards since when he started.
That's fucking outrageous.
Yeah.
That's outrageous. Yeah. I remember reading that like Gene Simmons did a similar thing where he was like, I've slept with over 2,000 women. And the first thing I thought was, who counts? Who counts to 2,000 and then does like a fucking publicity announcement about it? You know what I mean?
Incredibly insecure men with mental health issues. And I think the thing is that
it's fucking crazy.
Charlie Chaplin's mother's psychosis that he had to support her medical bills for was brought on by syphilis.
Oh, that makes sense.
Which because she had to sell her body to support them. So he was a child worker working on stage to support the medical bills of his mother who had contracted syphilis from prostitution.
So the way he dealt with that trauma was to fuck as many people as possible.
Yeah, because I'm not going to sit here and armchair therapize a man from the 1920s, but I can see that it tracks that if I do this, then it's normal.
It's just
a healthy appetite. Yeah, I can normalize it. You know, he once said, what was the quote? To gauge the morals of my family by commonplace standards would be as wrong as putting a thermometer in boiling water. It's that thing of like... Oof.
So his baseline is like a 10 on our stress levels, right? So that's his baseline, right? Fuck.
I think his thing is that he is without a doubt incredibly mentally unwell, and he is in a time where sitting down with your mate and talking about movies until you both smile a bit more is not considered productive behavior, and seeing a therapist is considered what wrong-uns do. And Chaplin was not a moral man by our standards, and he was barely a legal man by the standards of his day, but I can understand where some of his shit may have come from, and that is what we're going to get into next episode. So don't worry, there's no criminality that's made the historical record. So
thanks for phrasing it that way. Jesus Christ, I feel shit now for the I was cracking grooming jokes about child chefs,
yeah,
and now I'm feeling like I might have just shot all my material for next week's episode, like way too soon.
Yeah, totally. Fuck's sake. Fine, now you're gonna have to engage with it. Now your jokes are gone.
Yes, now I have
you're gonna have to really dig down in the dirt with me.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to get into the weeds with the almost pedophilic Charlie Chaplin. Fuck's sake. Did this man also invent Barely Legal? Isn't that like a porn magazine?
I don't know. Why would I know that?
I don't know. I think I saw it in a Shell garage. I don't know.
Is that the barometer now?
I don't know. I don't know where people get porn from. I don't know what it is. Do you know what I mean? It just exists by railway tracks and in garages. Apparently. Do you want to play a game?
Do you know what, mate? I do, because we're going to take a different route with the YouTube.
Okay.
We're going to do slightly more involved, slightly longer edit videos, a little bit more meaty, a little bit more exclusive.
It's going to be its own thing. It's its own entity now.
Yeah, we were trying to have the YouTube be like a little morsel on the singular plate that is the podcast.
Yeah.
And we're now realizing it's just going to be two plates. And as two men with crippling mental health issues, that's not going to be more stressful in the slightest. You know?
I also feel like we've got shitloads of ideas for the podcast that yeah. would be incredibly hard to fit
Don't
in.
Fit the schedule.
Yeah, it'd be hard yeah. to fit in. But with the YouTube, no one gives a fuck. It's just a video that goes up, you know what I mean? So every 2 weeks, yeah, we're going to be chucking videos up of shit that we want to do.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily tie into the podcast. It might do. It might not do.
Yeah.
But it's going to be good.
But we can also push it and go, boys, yes. go check this out. We can tell people yes. what it is. And it'll be up there for a couple of weeks, so we can push you to it. Mm. So back to the game. I would like to play a game. And I've got a little Chaplin True or False ready for you, mate.
Ooh, I'm on board.
Right. So Chaplin, true or false?
Okay.
Charlie Chaplin came third in a Charlie Chaplin lookalike contest.
It sounds ridiculous. I don't know which way to go with it with Chaplin. True?
True. True. He famously came third in a lookalike contest. Now, the real question is, why did he enter a Charlie Chaplin lookalike contest?
Oh, man. It's the worst possible way to find out that you're aging as badly as you think you are. You know what I mean? Like, that's got to be rough. They've got to have been using, like, a young picture of him, and he entered when he was in, like, his 50s.
I think he was an older man, yeah. Oh, I think, you know, he had the patter and the walk and everything, but, like...
Yeah, if he wasn't too busy diddling children, I'd feel bad for him. Do you know what I mean?
Diddling. I don't know. This is what we're going to answer.
Okay.
Right. Over the course of 2 weeks, Chaplin made an actress do 342 takes of one scene.
That sounds outlandish and ridiculous, but he was also mad obsessive and mentally unwell. So I'm going to say true.
Yeah. True.
Insane. True. Insane.
Yeah. 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 Also, it wasn't just about her performance again. It was because there was no script. So he was writing it as they were shooting it.
Oh, just be... okay, fine. Now I'm getting that he can make 80 films in 10 years because he didn't fucking write any of them. Someone just gave him a camera and was like, go on then.
Yeah, pretty much. Right. Chaplin, true or false? Charlie Chaplin is covered in concrete.
What do you mean? In what context? He's buried, like now?
Yeah, he's currently surrounded by concrete.
Right, okay. False?
No. Just a few months after Chaplin died,
right.
Some robbers broke into the cemetery.
Oh, fuck off.
Stole his coffin.
Right.
And sent Una Chaplin, his wife, a $600,000 ransom demand.
What the fuck?
They got caught. The coffin was recovered. And he's buried in a concrete vault, a theft-proof concrete vault.
Jesus Christ, man. Can you imagine your husband dies? You've just turned 19 and your husband dies, right, of old age because he was an old man when he married you at 14 years old. Then, at the tender age of 19, your husband's fresh corpse goes missing and is ransomed back to you. For 600 grand. 600 grand is such a specific number. Why not half a mil? Why not a mil? Why 600? It's so... That's
they
the
had
most...
plans, man. They had stuff they needed to get on with, right?
For what? For 600 grand? When did he die? Like...
Well, that's a question. That's a question. True or false?
Oh, my
Charlie
God.
Charlie Chaplin died on New Year's Day in 1977.
It sounds false. But again, it's Chaplin. I don't trust anything that you're saying with that stupid fucking look on your face that you keep doing. True.
No, it's not. It's false.
Fuck you!
He died at 4 a.m. on Christmas Day.
Oh, you're...
With his fourth wife, Una, and 7 of their 8 children at his bedside.
Jesus
Happy
Christ.
Christmas.
Jesus Christ, man. That man. Honestly, that guy's day-to-day must have been... So intense.
It was 100%. I'm reading the autobiography of his first wife, Lita Gray,
right?
Who was the one who played the angel in The Kid.
Yeah.
And she wrote one autobiography, which she then later retracted and said was at the behest of her mother, who asked her to sensationalize it because there was a big court case in the divorce. So she wrote this very like damning autobiography, which she then later came out and said, none of that was true. Let me tell you the real story. So I'm reading that one.
Right.
And she was like, Charlie would often want to have sex 6 times a day.
A day?
A day.
Whilst making 80 movies a year.
Yeah, yeah.
Learning to rollerblade. doing the craft station on all of his movies, writing the soundtrack,
yeah, yeah,
doing the editing, doing all of this shit. He'd 6 times a day on top of that.
There was no internet, mate. He didn't have a black rectangle in his pocket, did he?
The internet has ruined us, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
6 times a day.
Yeah, at times. I'm not sure he kept that up, you know, but 7 days a week.
I'm exhausted if I go to the toilet 6 times a day. If I need to take 6 pisses in one day, I'm like, God, it's a busy day, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Fucking hell. How many kids did he have? 8 with the last wife.
Right, okay. Ooh, that's a good question. How many children... I just lost count.
Can you imagine? I've counted the 2,000 women that I've slept with, but I lost count of my literal biological children.
Yeah. He had 11 children.
Oh, that's not too bad. I mean, it's shocking, but it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
As a percentage of 2,000, it could be worse.
Yeah. Yeah. Fucking hell. All right.
Charlie Chaplin's The Circus.
Yes.
Includes proof of time travel.
Is this like one of those weird internet theories where it's like Matt Groening can see the future because there's Simpsons episodes? Yeah, okay.
Or it's proof of time travel, Ben.
Well, I mean, I want it to be true, so I'm going to say true.
Well, good. Yeah, you should, because in the DVD extras of Chaplin's The Circus, which came out in 1928.
Of course they had DVD extras then.
For proof of time travel, mate.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
No, there's a clip from the premiere, and there's a woman holding a black rectangle to her ear and talking into it.
Like a walkie-talkie or a radio.
Like a smartphone.
Yeah, but I mean, they had fucking radios and shit back then. Come on, this is like...
Well, it's not a radio. It's a hearing aid. But still, you know, Daniel Radcliffe was about. I've seen photos of him in World War One.
Oh, yeah. He's just got a very fucking mundane face, though. It's like a...
He's got... Default like a, man face.
Yeah, it's like a beige balloon and someone's loosely drawn features on it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But yeah, you won. You absolutely won.
Oh,
well
good
done.
Shit, man.
Congratulations.
Hat on the back for me. Bully!
Bullet, capital, sir. We got time for... Oh, wait. Ben.
So,
what are you rating Modern Times by Charlie Chaplin, 1936?
Ooh, what did I rate the kid?
6, you fucker.
Yeah, 6 was 6 felt good. I don't like this as much as the kid because of the talking.
Right.
Kind of throws me out of it. I'll get into that next episode, Chaplin film, but it pulls me out of it a bit. I'm going to say 5. It loses a point for the sound effects and the fucking talking nonsense.
Okay.
But hear me out. It's not a 5 that's sort of like a criticism of being sort of like, oh, this is a bad film. I didn't enjoy myself. It was a great film. Subtext is great.
Mm-hmm.
The moral of the story is great. There's a lot to digest.
There is.
And there's a lot going on. And it's a lot longer than the kids. So it's like, well, we got an extra 40 minutes. So what do we do with it? I don't know. 106 more storylines? Yeah, mint. Scram them all in, bud. It's a fun watch. It's a great story. It's a beautiful film. Incredibly made. It's just exhausting. Like, it's a very tiring film to watch. By the end of it, I was knackered.
It's called Modern Times, Ben. Were you expecting it to be easy?
No, again, this is the whole thing. It all works through. But on my week off, when I'm trying to get my work-life balance back in, you know, my chakras back in line, it's...
Fair.
Yeah, it's a long one, man. But yeah, I'll go 5.
Okay, fair. I'm going to give this a 9 for me.
Wow.
Yeah, mate. I think given the year it came out, the fact that the opening shot of this just presented without context,
dude,
is a bunch of sheep being pushed through a pen, and then there's one little black sheep in there.
Yeah.
And then the film starts, and it's never referenced, it's never mentioned. It's just him going, "Here's what's up."
I fucking loved it. It immediately cuts to all of the guys like rushing out of a subway station, mm-hmm. heading straight for a factory. Mwah. Beautiful.
And I think
beautiful fuck you to start a film.
And I know you don't like the dialogue. I know that you wanted it to be silent.
Yeah.
I think for me it's telling that the only dialogue that is in the film is all mechanized. It's through machines, it's through speakers, it's off records. And that Charlie hated dialogue.
Good.
He had a whole fucking point about the tramp. He saw sound as abusive. He said moving pictures need sound as much as Beethoven needs lyrics. He thought that sound was likely, so he said it would enslave movie making to a kind of mechanization. And so all the actual language is presented through mechanized means. And it's him going, this is shit. And it's not going to work for me. You know, and I like the fact that he speaks.
Yeah, I was going to say he sings, doesn't he?
He sings in utter gibberish. And the title card comes up and says, don't worry about the words, just let the music carry you.
Oh, it's literally him going, I hate that. I thought it was French.
No.
I was like, oh my days, this man is so
he
cultured.
Marketed he marketed the film as the tramp speaks, and when he does finally speak, it's just nonsense.
Oh, that's fucking perfect. All right. I'm giving it a 6.
Okay.
That's knocked it up a point because that's hilarious.
Okay.
That's hilarious.
Time for Comic Corner.
I've got one here from Ross Grant, who has replied to one of our stories on Instagram.
Love Ross.
I fucking love Ross. He is our resident meme maker.
Yeah, he makes all the memes on our Discord, and he's a national treasure.
He is literally... He's the second funniest person on this podcast.
I'd say he's the funniest person.
I'd say joint funniest people on this podcast are Anthony and Ross Grant. And then it's... Yeah. There's a then bit of a us. Gap, and then it's us. So he replied to a story that I believe you posted. The story was, my toxic trait is that if they open Jurassic Park, I'd still totally go. And Ross Grant has put, did Ben write this? With all the question marks and exclamation marks. And I'm like, I didn't, but I would go. I would go. I appreciate you seeing me for who I am. That's nice. Very sweet. Yeah, thank you.
I'm now going to burn all the time that we have left in this episode with just abuse.
Do it.
Right. So you stated that you were surprised when watching 1921's The Kid at how offensive the storyline was.
Yeah.
It's a baby in a bin.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to go. Backroom Bandit on YouTube said, what's the offensive part, though? Yeah. Life sucks. Especially back then, with backbreaking factory work being the standard. Mr. F. Rickard, grow up for God's sakes.
But yeah, this is, I mean, that's...
Chuck DeMuro, I'm offended that anyone is offended by Charlie Chaplin. I mean, we're about to burst that bubble next episode.
But I mean, this is the point that I was making. I was saying
they don't care, Ben. They don't care.
But I was saying, like, I'm a fan of the film because it was shocking.
Back then, the poor had to work. Spoilt brat generation.
What are we talking about?
You're part of the spoilt brat generation.
I'm poor and I work. Yeah. I'm not seeing that. I'm like, what the fuck, man?
Jenna J, the kids these days, so sensitive. Grow up. Sensitive is spelt hideously wrong.
Also, I am 35 years old.
Yeah. Get a helmet, man. At this point, everything will offend and hurt you. 9 emojis.
Amazing.
And then my favorite one, because they've commented twice.
Okay.
MH20172, 7 days ago. Good times create weak men.
Okay.
And then a few hours later, good times create weak men.
Oh, wow. So he wanted to make sure that it was seen just a few hours later.
Yeah. Really needed you to know.
Do you know what I found offensive about all of those comments?
Hmm.
How upset people are getting over something as silly as a 35-year-old man waffling on about Charlie Chaplin on the internet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I really like...
Almost like...
They really got upset.
Offended.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I didn't mean to offend anyone with
Who
my
gets
statement.
Offended by a 35-second video on social media?
Oh, that's crazy.
Do you know what it is? I think good times create weak men.
I think that's it, man. I think good times create weak men. Join me in 2 hours for what I really think good times create.
That was Comic Corner. If you want to be part of next week's Comic Corner, just find us on TikTok or Instagram or Facebook or We've got Discord where people all hang out and chat, and Ross Grant makes memes and we all chat about movies that are coming out. It's good fun.
We've got a new website under production right now. If you head to www.goodtimescreateweekmen.com, there's just bunches of pictures of me crying over various films.
Oh, don't promise. Don't promise. I would genuinely love that website.
I tell you what, you get the domain name, I'll build it.
It's not happening. That's all the time we have for this week. Join us next week when we're back on the Ghostbusters series. We're very excited for that. Ghostbusters 2, baby!
Ghostbusters 2!
For now, I'm just going to tell you to do what society always tells you to do and apparently has told everyone to do since 1936, mm-hmm. which is just consume, buy stuff, pay your way to happiness.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Ben's going to wrap up the thoughts, themes, and ideas of this film to thank you for spending an hour of your time with us, especially at the start of the week.
Yeah.
By giving you a little pep talk.
Yeah, because we love you.
Consume.
So the moral this week is I'm going to take it straight out of the tramp's mouth. No matter what life throws at you, get up, dust yourself off. We'll get along. I mean, we're all in it together. It's not about what you got or what you do for work or your social status or anything like this. It doesn't matter about your bank account. It's the people you have around you. And the amount of children that you can groom to be your private chefs. That's very important, apparently.
I think
Charlie Chaplin's on.
I knew you were taking it
to
the kids.
He's got to be double figures by now, right? He's done like 80 films. Come on. Child chefs!